We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. Go!
What is up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of In the Know. This is your co-host, Mason Ginsberg, doing my best to cover for the better half of this podcast. Shemit is actually not in this country right now. And so we are left with yours truly handling the host role for this one. So, Shemit decided that this was a good idea, or at least a passable idea. So I guess we'll see how this goes. But good news is that we have a couple of great guests coming on today to cover for me, essentially. First, checking in with the new Pelicans beat writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, Andrew Lopez. Talk about the team's recent stretch of games. Obviously, not quite as nice as the first few games of the season, but pick his brain on why that is. There's a couple obvious parts being the brutal schedule and the injuries, but anything else that has really captured his attention, not only negative, but also any sort of positives. And so that was a really, really good conversation. A lot of good stuff from Andrew, smart basketball mind right there. So really happy that, Times McGeehan's got him, covering the team for him. And so, the back half of this podcast will be with a name a lot of you will know, Brett Dawson, who used to cover the Pelicans for a season, with the Advocate, and now is in Oklahoma City covering the Thunder. He was with the Oklahoma, now he's with the Athletic. And so, again, a couple great guests. With Brett, we talk obviously about the upcoming Thunder Pelicans game on Monday night. But had the good fortune of meeting both these guys on more than one occasion in person, and I can't say enough good things about both of them. I mean, super nice guys, great at what they do. Yeah, so just personally, professionally, just really can't say enough about each of these two guys. And so looking forward to getting them, getting all their thoughts on the Pelicans, and happy to have you guys check it out. And so without further ado, let's jump into the content. All right. For our first guest tonight, we have Andrew Lopez, Pelicans beat writer for Times-Picayune, NOLA.com. Really excited to have him on. And again, doing my best or our best to fill in for Schmidt, who's our normal host of this podcast. I'm kind of just the color guy, but Andrew, thank you so much for taking some time. Really good to talk to someone who's been kind of in the trenches since day one with this team.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. I love the work that you guys do. Very glad to be able to be on with you guys and, you know, just give a little bit of insight on this team right now.
Awesome. So let's just start generally speaking. Everyone kind of knows the ups and downs that have gone on with this Pelicans team to date. I mean, we had a couple awesome games with a fully healthy squad, and then we had a bit of a drop off the next couple games and still got the win, which is a lot of what you want to see from a good team, even when you have your off shooting nights, to be able to still get the W. I think the Clippers are good, and I also think the Nets are a fringe playoff contender in the East. I maybe like them a little more than most, but and then of course we've had a kind of a mess since then. So any thoughts about where this team is right now versus maybe what you expected, or anything that you're overexcited about or disappointed in?
Yeah, right now, I mean, it's kind of hard to get a read on this team. I remember putting up a story, I think it was on Friday after they were 4-4, and it was kind of like who is this team right now? Mm-hmm. And now here we are 9 games into the season, and I don't think we know really who this team is. We have an idea of who they are when you go back and look at, you know, those first 4 games when everybody's healthy, everything is clicking, everything looks great, and then AD gets hurt, Darius gets hurt, Elfrid Payton gets hurt, and I don't think that you can understate, I think, the Elfrid Payton injury more. I mean, obviously, when you lose AD, you lose your superstar, you lose your guy who makes everything go. That's understandable. Elfrid has really made a lot of the offense go, and you know, you look at his on-off numbers so far, and they're really good when he's on the court. Now, a lot of that has to do with the fact that I think of his 144 minutes, 124 have been with Anthony Davis and kind of that starting group. However, he allows Drew to kind of stay off the ball. He allows Drew to focus on defense. It brings the defensive numbers down. Right now, I think they do miss him a little bit. Gentry kind of went off a little bit last night. That was our first case, I think, of fiery Alvin Gentry last night after the loss in San Antonio. And when he did that, you know, he talked about the ball not moving on offense or making, trying to get too fancy. I mean, I'm gonna point out Nico right now, not because anything that Nico did, but in particular, this is the one memory I have, is Nico's going to like behind the back passes a lot for some reason in the last 2 or 3 games. Yeah. And I think he made the first one and then missed like the next 3. But like, that's, I think, an example of, you know, them trying to do a little bit too much when it comes to, instead of just making the simple play. And that's kind of what he's been drilling. So it's weird to see what this team is. I don't think they're a sub 500 team. I do think they are, a playoff team in the West. And I think as the team gets healthier, those things will kind of start to come together a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us are very in line with your comments around Elfrid Payton specifically. I think it's been, it's not even maybe necessarily how good he is. And I think we've shown, personally, he's already exceeded my expectations in how he's played so far. But it's just that the Pelicans are kind of so thin in creators, yeah, are pure points that can do as much as Payton can do. And so when you lose him, you're back to suddenly Tim Frazier, who they just signed, of course, is now starting point guard. So it's been a struggle. And I think one of the more underappreciated parts of Elfrid Payton's game that I didn't even really appropriately think about has been his rebounding. And having five guys, or having a guard at least that will crash. I don't want to call it Westbrook light, but just having that extra rebounding. And obviously, if you lose him and you lose AD, they've gotten crushed in the glass, and that hurts your ability to get out and transition. It hurts your ability to score at the rate they are at and play at the pace they've been playing at. So I definitely agree that Payton's been that loss has been felt by the Pelicans. Any sense on when they expect him back?
You know, they keep listing him as out. I mean, if it's a regular old sprained ankle, I would expect him to miss, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. He's approaching maybe the 2 week mark. He's about a 1.5 right now. It feels like he's missed a little bit of a longer time because they had that stretch of 4 games in 6 days. But I mean, yeah, a sprained ankle is normally going to take you, you know, about a week and a half or 2 weeks to get over. I would expect him back maybe the tail end of this week. We'll get a better sense of that, I think, you know, Tuesday, once the team is back in New Orleans.
Yep. That makes sense. Kind of fast forwarding to the most recent game against the Spurs. I know that there's probably a decent contingent of our listeners or of the general Pelicans fan base that was focused on a different game last night. And although both games seem to go about in similar fashion.
it was not one where you could like, oh, hey, let's flip over to the Pelicans game and get a little happy. No, it was not that at all.
Yeah. And we, to be clear, everyone, we were recording right after the Saints win. So at least we got some sort of sense of happiness from one of our
you
sports
end
teams.
The weekend on a high note.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You end the weekend on a high note.
So, any takeaways from that game for the Pelicans last night in San Antonio? It seemed like, you know, they started out strong, and then once you got to the halfway point in the first quarter, the wheels fell off the bus. And this a similar thing happened. I think it was the Blazers game where it fell into an early hole, and there just was no way. They didn't have enough to really ever climb out of it. You kind of felt like it was that maybe it was a game in the fourth quarter when they were on the halfway point, they got within single digits, but I don't know if we ever really felt they had a chance to win the game. And so any specific takeaways from that one?
Specific takeaways would be the lineup issues, kind of what you saw in that Spurs game where he kind of started to tweak the lineups. You mentioned, you know, early on that first half, it looked like they just didn't have any legs. You go back to that Portland game and they had their legs, they had it, and then the road trip kind of hit them all at once, I think, in the fourth quarter of that Portland game. And they had no legs. It was done. And they couldn't play their game. Fast forward to Saturday against the Spurs. And it looks like it's going to be, oh, this team is good. AD's back. They're back into a flow. They jump out to a fifth, you know, a 17-10 lead. And then the Spurs go on a 14-0 run to close the first quarter. And then you're behind the eight ball and you can't get back. You can't do that against teams like the Spurs. You can't beat yourself. You can't miss 13 free throws. You can't turn the ball over in easy situations. And that's what you ended up doing. And that kind of hurt him. The biggest takeaway to me was how he used those lineups last night. And it was kind of weird. He took kind of the Frank Jackson minutes away, gave those to Tim Frazier because he removes Tim Frazier from the starting lineup to kind of put Wesley Johnson out there. Now, that could be one of those things where he kept talking, you know, in the preseason of he's going to let the matchups dictate his starting lineup sometimes. And when you're going against a Spurs team that features a 6'7 DeMar DeRozan, a 6'8 Dante Cunningham, LaMarcus Aldridge, and you're playing against a bigger lineup, okay, then maybe you need to go with a bigger small forward and have Wesley Johnson out there. So that was kind of my one big takeaway. And I guess the other one is you finally saw the Anthony Davis, Nico Mirotic, Julius Randle lineup that everybody had kind of been waiting on so far. And he played them for a decent stretch together. I think it was 9 minutes together, which I think that makes it already their 10th or 11th most used lineup this season. A lot of pieces have changed so much because of injuries and other things. That's one of their better used lineups, and that group has an offensive rating in that 9 minutes of 131.3. This is using the NBA site. A defensive rating of 100. That's a net of 31.3. I'm not, you know, I went into journalism for a reason. I'm not a good math guy, but I think I can do that one. And that's a good net rating, and I think that's more in line with how the starting lineup performs. It wouldn't surprise me if going forward, that is your closing lineup. Here on out.
Yeah, I could absolutely see this becoming their closing lineup. Maybe not against every single team, but certainly against a lot of them. And again, maybe it's not ideal, but at the same time, if you think about who you're replacing, so it's probably either right their starting lineup when fully healthy, which has been great in a small sample size, but it's been it dominant. I think it's like plus 40 in net rating or something wild like that.
Yeah, it's something ridiculously high.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. So, if you're not going to go with that, if you're going to go with, if you think that to get your most talented players on the floor, you're obviously, you got Drew, you've got Davis. That's easy.
Yeah.
And then you go with Randall and Nico. As far as talented players go, they're definitely within your top five most talented players on the roster. And then you got to decide either cut Peyton or Moore. And maybe you go offense, defense when you can. And I think Moore is probably a slightly better defender, especially when he's guarding people his own size than Peyton. But yeah. I think offensively, Peyton really, as we've seen in recent games, Peyton really helps make them click. And so I think it's going to be, I really hope they explore that lineup more, because as far as the talent the Pelicans have on the wing, talent's probably the wrong word to describe it, because there isn't much of it. I mean, you've got.
Yeah, you almost have to go with either a three guard lineup when you're trying to close out games, like they've done where if you're putting your starters out there where it's Peyton, it's Moore, and it's Holiday, or you have to go three bigs and Randall, meet Nico, and AD. There's not much in the middle, and I think to your point, maybe if you're going to use, say, you know, if you're picking between Elfrid and Etuan, it's almost like a who's having the you're going to pick the hotter hand. If it's like a game like last night, obviously Elfrid wasn't there on Saturday night, I should say. Elfrid wasn't there, but you know, Etuan was hitting threes in the third, like he was part of the group to kind of bring you back. You use him, Elfrid. It's, you know, he brings you so much more on the offense. He can switch more with Drew. But you're right. You don't have many options at a small forward, whether it's, you know, Solo or Wesley Johnson or Darius Miller. There's spots where I think the three of them could play, and I don't see it being in the fourth quarter right now.
Yeah, and I've if anyone listened to the Hardwood Knox podcast I went on with Dan Favale yesterday, I spent probably way too much time bashing on Solomon Hill, so I'm going to try not to do that tonight. but yeah, I mean, even if we think about, and we'll have a next guest, Brett Dawson, who talked about the Thunder game coming up, I'm really excited about. But even if you look at that lineup, the way they play, I don't see a reason why they can't throw that three big lineup out there and try to have some success. I mean, I think it would even make even more sense when you look at it if they had their full complement of players and had Roberson out there, because you could really just ignore him on the defensive end. He's one of the best, if not the best, wing defender in the NBA when he's healthy. But you can pretty much just say, just leave him out of there and focus and kind of crowd the paint a little more. But even so, I think it's a lineup that we saw. It can be successful. Granted, one game, so no overreactions. But if it's such a unique complement of skill sets. I think Randall, when he's locked in, can defend well on the perimeter. Nico will struggle on the perimeter, but he's a very smart defender overall. You could see, in the Blazers series that it's part of a team defense. He's strong, and I think he does a lot of things well. And so it's a versatile group. So I really do hope that Gentry continues to see what he's got.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about that group is. It works because you have AD as kind of like the backstop, basically. If anything is like, if you do have a 6'5" guy on the wing having to be guarded by Nico or Julius, you know, you have the eraser back there in Anthony Davis to kind of make up for any mistakes. Like you pointed out, it also helps when maybe there's an offensive guy that you can leave open on the wing, whether it's a Roberson or, you know, they tried to do it in the Spurs game by leaving Dante Cunningham open. He actually hit a lot of shots, and it didn't really, help him out that too much.
Of course,
because of course he's going to do it against the Pels of all teams. But I do think that there is some. This is maybe the lineup that I want to watch. I think the most, and just to see how it works, because, you know, 10 years ago it makes sense to have guys who are 6'9" playing the three spot and. In right now in this NBA, it just does not fit any mold whatsoever of how to play in today's NBA, and these guys are making it work.
Yeah, and so Michael McNamara wrote for Bourbon Street Shots. He wrote a pretty good column about a week ago when it didn't look like this team was even entertaining, the idea of playing all three together. And it's a little bit more forward looking. Obviously, we're struggling just to figure out what's going to happen next game. But thinking about next season and how, they can go over the cap to re-sign Nico. They can't go over the cap to re-sign Randall. So how much do they want to kind of bend over backwards to make sure they can keep those three guys together, assuming it works well this season? And I think, and his conclusion was kind of just like, if you're not going to play them all three together at all, then you really can't justify spending a bunch of money to keep all three of them on the roster. And it's especially when you consider you're going to need cap space probably to bring back Julius Randle. So it's just a question of, is it going to be used with any sort of frequency, and B, can it work? And I think you've got to figure that out if you're thinking more long-term. And obviously there's a lot more issues with thinking long-term, especially as it relates to their franchise player. But I think that's kind of an important thing to figure out.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I think we hadn't seen it all well, I mean, this was something that they talked about at Media Day. So we've talked about this for going on 6 weeks now. And I think some of the injuries in camp kind of hurt, because they have not used this lineup in practice. As of a week and a half ago, they had not thrown this group out at all. They practiced it a little bit on the road, I think, because I don't think Gentry would just throw this lineup out there without ever having been on the floor in practice. But you're finally starting to get to it, and maybe it's because they had to work on some other things, get some other things down, and now they can kind of start to deploy this lineup a little bit. It's interesting to me. It's fascinating to me. I want to see this work just because I think it's absurd to even think about, like I said, in today's NBA. But, Michael made a good point in that, you really need to see what it does before you get to the end of the year and decide, okay, what's Randall going to do? How much can I, can I afford to play Nico? And obviously a lot of that all of the centers around, AD putting his signature on that Supermax next year.
Yeah.
So that's when you can really start to see, okay, this is what I'm going to do with this team. But, I think it can work in most situations, as long as there isn't a fifth guy on the floor that can shoot, where you kind of put maybe either Nico or Julius at a disadvantage defensively.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your we've talked a little bit about Peyton and how much the Pelicans miss him as far as their other key addition this offseason. What are your thoughts around what you've seen from Julius Randle so far? Anything that has particularly surprised you about how he's played? Anything that's given you maybe a little bit of cause for concern?
I'll be honest. I was surprised with his on-off ratings early on. And I think right now, I think he's with him on the bench, I think they're a plus. And again, this is using the NBA media site. I think they're like a plus 12 in offensive defensive rating, and the offensive rating just kind of plummets when he's on the bench. I don't know how much of that is a product of him playing with the second unit. His numbers with AD are very good when you put him in those types of lineups. But it kind of surprised me there. But this is what I thought you would get out of him. He was going to be like a bull in a china shop on that second unit. He's averaging numbers that would make him, for most voters, a sixth man of the year candidate, because most voters aren't going to look at the on-off stack. They're going to look at, 17 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 52% from the field, sixth man of the year, which good for
him.
We
have living proof in Jamal Crawford that that's the case.
Yeah, that's what people are going to do. But I do think that he needs to still get comfortable. I do believe that a lot of his game right now, not a lot of his game, but a little bit of his game is hampered by the foot injury. He is dealing with plantar fasciitis in the left foot. It has been something that he has dealt with before in his career, he told us. He is practicing less, trying to keep that foot healthy. I think Sunday was the first time he had been off the injury report completely, not even a probable since the season started. But overall, I like what he's doing. There's obviously room for him to grow. I think he has just been looking for his shot maybe a little too much in the early part of the season. But I'm not convinced that that's not what he's been told to go out there and do. He's probably told go out there and score. Okay, you look at his per 36, he's the highest scorer on the team right now in terms of his per 36 average. He is out there to score on that second unit. And I think that works for him. I think that works for what you need from that second unit. But You'd like to see him. He was kind of talked about as a bigger passer 2 or 3 years ago. I want to see some of that come into play a little bit more, rather than him just bringing the ball up the court and bullying his way into getting free throws in the lane. I love the fact that he's averaging almost 7 free throws a game. I'd like to see him hit a little bit more, but
yeah.
I like what he has done so far. I'm not as bullish on him as maybe some other people are.
Yeah. What a disaster, by the way, that I think he and AD and Randall were like 4 for 12 from free throws against the Spurs.
Just Randall was 4 for 12. He was pretty bad. And then Drew, Anthony was 7 of 10. It was kind of funny. I watched that game with my dad last night because we were watching the NBA game, and he's like, "Anthony Davis missed 3 free throws." We were watching, and I was like, "We actually watched him miss all 3 of the free. Like, he made every other shot." And my dad's like, "Oh, it's just because of me, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, Dad, that's kind of how it works." So combined, those two were 11 of 22. That's not good. You want to see those numbers perform, go up. And it's kind of funny because Julius, I think, in that Portland game in the first half when he had the 23 points, was 9 of 10 from the line. So you know he can do it. You want to see him be able to, shoot a little bit more consistent from the line.
And kind of I share your general sentiments about him so far. I think there's been some – I think he's been pretty polarizing so far. I've seen some takes from people that are just kind of looking at his raw stats and saying, wow, what a great pickup, which, I mean, I still agree it was a great pickup for the mid-level. I mean, I do that every single time, trade Randall for him for that much money. And then on the flip side, there are people who are like, man, he's just kind of – he's kind of like Boogie Light in this, which, again, shouldn't be considered a bad thing, but just that he's looking for his own shots and not really playing within the team construct. And I think the answer is somewhere in between. I think that – I think he – again, yeah. It's similar to most topics regarding this team to this point, is that we need to see it in a full. We need to see him in the full healthy lineup to really make that evaluation. Like, if he's playing alongside Drew, AD, maybe Nico, or just the rest. If it's Randall and the starters, with him and for Mirotić, is he going to play that same way, or is he going to play more as a Not that to say he can't go get his shot, especially if they're late in the shot clock and need to get a bucket. He's not a bad option. But is he going to be more of a facilitator? Can he, can we rely on him to be less of a, I'm just going to go get mine, and more of a team player? And so I think we saw it a decent amount in the early going, but we need to see it more within a fully healthy roster, which we don't really have right now.
Right now, and I'm looking at the NBA, the lineups they've used the most. So obviously the most used lineup for the Pelicans this year is that starting five of Alfred, Drew, Nico, Etuan, and Anthony Davis. They've played 60 minutes together. The second most used lineup so far is Julius and the starters, AD, Drew, Etuan, and Alfred. And in that lineup, offensive rating 126.2, defensive rating 104.7, a net of 21.5. When he is on the floor with this, with those groups, he does better. And that's what you see. It's when he gets on the floor with some kind of weird lineups. I'm actually looking at it right now. There's a lineup of Julius, Etuan, Nico, Drew, and Ian. And in 10 minutes, they have an offensive rating of 87.8, a defensive rating of 151. That is not great. There's a lineup of, I think he's on the floor with Nico, Etuan, Drew, and Tim Frazier. That was the starting lineup, I think, one night, and offensive rating of 40 in 5 minutes and a defensive rating of 142. Those lineups, really, really bad. But when he plays with the starters, I think he's really good. And when he plays with Drew and AD, his numbers tend to go up a little bit more. And I think that's the kind of Julius Randle that they really envision. And when you see him in those types of lineups, then – you kind of start to go, oh, this is what they're talking about right now. So the more time he gets with those guys, I think you'll see a little bit of a better picture of what Julius Randle really means, to this team.
Yeah, and it's just we always do this in like early November or late October, even later on in November. We dig into the numbers, even though it's a pretty small sample size, and we know that this is probably not the best exercise to do with such inconclusive data. But we're gonna scrutinize it, of course, because that's how we do things.
Yeah.
And, we could look back on this conversation in a month and be like, man, we were idiots. So, but any I don't want to keep you too long, and I know we got Brett coming on in a little bit, but anything else that we haven't really touched on for this team recently? Any nuggets that you have been thinking about for this team that any nuggets of wisdom to bestow upon our avid Pelicans listeners?
You know, one of the things I noticed with this team so far is, you know, when Nico got off to his fast start, you know, it was kind of, you know, I think Gentry even said, like, he's not going to, you know, to continue hitting at this rate. He's not going to continue hitting, you know, for, you know, 30 and 10. He's hitting at 22.9 and 10.8 right now, I think, for the season, 22.4 and 10.9. But what he's doing on with the offensive glass while being a shooter is almost unprecedented for a guy to attempt 7 threes a game and still get nearly 3 offensive rebounds a game. I mean, that part is pretty impressive. I think, looking back right now, the only person to actually do that in NBA history, was Ryan Anderson, who did it, for the Pelicans, you know, a few years back. But he has been such a key part to this. And I think it's been him going through an entire offseason with the Pels and being around those guys has helped. He really is, I think, the perfect complement to Anthony Davis. I don't really think he gets much better than what he's doing right now. And that group, you're talking about just the three-man lineup of AD, Drew, and Nico is one of the better lineups. They have a defensive rating under 100 so far. You know, when those three guys are on the floor, and it's he's a sneaky guy. Sometimes he can get to the rim. He'll get to the rim in 2 dribbles and, you know, finish at the lane. As long as he's doing what he's doing, you know, I think that's why I think this is a playoff team. Obviously, you're going to have AD do you know, doing his thing. You're going to have Drew doing his thing. Etwan getting his 14, 15 a game. As long as he's doing that, great. But I think the key to this is Nico doing what he's doing right now. And is he going to average 22 and 11? I don't think so. But 22 and 9, 23 and 9 is not that far out of the question. And I think that's going to go a long way to helping the Pelicans break out of this funk once everybody's healthy.
Yeah, with you 100%. And we'll leave one more stat nugget for you before we part ways. And so I just looked at that three-man group on the floor, and then without Tim Frazier, looking at cleaning the glass. And again, no slight to Tim Frazier, but they're a plus 35.6 net rating. So excluding garbage time, we got like 132 offensive rating and 96 defensive rating. So just to your point, and the team, they do a lot of things well, and they're tough to stop. And I don't think we've even seen the best offense from Drew Holiday yet this season. So hopefully similar.
No, we just started, I think, to see it the other night when he was looking for his shot against San Antonio, and that's aggressive Drew is best Drew. And when you have aggressive Drew playing with AD and Nico the way they're playing, this offense can be really, really special.
Well, Andrew, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure all the Pelicans fans appreciate it. Before we let you go, tell all the listeners where they can find your work, where they can read you, et cetera.
Hey, obviously you can find all of our work on NOLA.com/Pelicans. You know, hey, you can go ahead and NOLA.com/sports. Take a look at everybody for you know, while I'm here. But you can find me on Twitter, _Andrew_Lopez.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks. Hopefully we'll be checking in with you again in the near future. Taking this opportunity to talk to the guys who have feet on the ground and are at all the practices. And so nice to get your insight, and go celebrate this this Saints win. We'll talk to you soon.
Most definitely, man.
All right. For my next guest, again, big thanks to Andrew for coming on and talking about some of the recent Pelicans games. But really, really excited for this one. Timing worked out great because this is one of my favorite NBA media members to talk to, period, about anything, not just basketball. And so I think the last time I saw you, Brett, we were at Bub City in Chicago, and I think I may have spilled a beer on you or spilled a beer on myself. I don't really remember exactly, but thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk some Pelicans Thunder.
There was some beer spilling. That was a weird, I was in Chicago, not for Thunder Bulls. I was there because I'd gotten like delayed on a flight on my way to Charlotte from Minneapolis. And I ended up spending a night in Chicago. So that was, it was nice. It was a good break. We got to get together and watch some basketball and you could spill some beer. It was great.
So I think most of you guys who are listening know, are familiar with Brett Dawson's work. He is with now The Athletic and covers the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, he once upon a time was in New Orleans writing for The Advocate for a year about the Pelicans. And so he knows many of the players on the team. And he, before that, was writing, and I don't know the website or the paper, but for Kentucky basketball. So he and AD, they go way back.
Way back. way back in the day.
Great. So, start things off. I think particularly interesting for these two teams, even before we get into the actual matchup on Monday, is they've had kind of similar opposite seasons. I guess is the right way to put it, because the Pelicans started out 4-0 and they've had some injuries, and now suddenly they're 4-4 and, 4-5. 4-5. Man, that got bad in a hurry. But and so conversely, the Thunder had a tough start, similar injury issue. Russell Westbrook missed the first couple games, and even the next game or two was probably still getting back into game shape. And then they all of a sudden run off four straight, and now they're the Thunder ahead of the Pelicans in the standings.
Unbelievably, the Thunder might climb into the playoff race at this point. I do not think they are out of it at this point. I did not think they were out of it at 0-4. There are a few people who apparently did. Apparently even a friend in New Orleans thought so. I disagreed at the time. I continued to disagree with him. And I guess the Pelicans now are doomed as well, because they fall into 4-5. They are worse than the Thunder. Just no chance at making the playoffs at this stage.
The standings are just absurd at this point. Like, you look at the East and you're like, yeah. That all makes sense. You know, Philly maybe is struggling a little more than you expected. There are a couple moderate surprises, like the Wizards. I think that's a shit show. I thought the Wizards would be a playoff team, and right now they're just nothing. Nothing's making sense. I don't even know. Did they beat the Knicks tonight? I didn't see.
They did. I was interrupted. Okay. Pretty late.
Well, good for them. But yeah, you look at the Western Conference standings, and like, sure, the Warriors are on top. Nuggets are two, and that's, I think, people expected the Nuggets to be good this year. But then once you get past that, and it's a lot of like, holy crap, this is it's a small sample size, but it's still, we're looking at 10% of the season already through, and the Rockets are 3-5, the Lakers are 4-5, and you've got the Grizzlies and the Spurs, and no knock to the Spurs, but I mean, I didn't know how they pieced together defensively. I thought they were a fringe playoff team, but they've looked great. I think they're going to fall to 6-3, though. They think they're going to lose against, or have already lost against, the Magic tonight. But just a very interesting Western Conference landscape in the early going. Sacramento 6-4. We have to mention that, because that's pretty crazy. But yeah, how's any general thoughts on kind of where, and you know, Thunder or Pelicans, how they stack up in the West in the early going?
Well, I think for both of these teams, for the Thunder and the Pelicans, I think the top of the standings look pretty good, because obviously Golden State was going to be really good. I don't know that we knew Golden State would go 9-1 out of the gate. And in fact, I kind of thought maybe they wouldn't be this good. They seemed to kind of be remotivated after a year last year where clearly Houston was the more motivated team and Golden State was kind of coasting. I think adding a guy you're a little bit familiar with there in DeMarcus Cousins, and just to shake things up a little, has probably been good for them, even though he's not playing yet. So they're running away. But the other teams that are up there at the top, they're not going to run away from anybody. Denver's good, but you're not worried about Denver kind of running away with the two seed. You know, I don't think that Memphis is a playoff team. I don't think that Sacramento is a playoff team. I don't think the Spurs are a playoff lock, although it's looking more like they're, you know, they're legit. They seem to know who they are and play to an identity really well. But I think if you're Oklahoma City, you're New Orleans, you're Houston, you're the Lakers, you're one of these teams, even Minnesota to a lesser extent, and Utah even, you know, all those teams kind of scuffling around down in the lower reaches or out of the playoff picture at this point. I hate calling it the playoff picture on November 4th, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're not worried about those teams. Golden State, they knew would be up there, and those other teams, you feel like they'll hit a patch at some point where you can gain some ground. So I think we got a lot of teams kind of trying to figure themselves out, and they're probably in pretty good shape given who is kind of jumping out in front.
Yep. Yeah, and I think just being there is or in the mix early with all these teams kind of a little slightly clustered together, I think is important. Like I don't think the Rockets were as nervous about starting the way they did, because I think that they have the top end talent where they are pretty confident in figuring things out. But I think a team like I think there are some teams, maybe New Orleans is one of them, that if they got out to a slow start, people would have started hitting the panic button, justified or not. But yeah, I mean. I think when it comes to New Orleans and Oklahoma City, it's just been a situation where full strength, it feels fine. Injuries have happened, but hopefully both teams are healthy soon.
I think here people did hit the panic button, no question. At 0-4, there were fans going crazy. There was a lot of talk about like whether they were going to fire Billy Donovan. There's been much talk about their starting lineup and kind of the weak links there. People hit the panic button, but certainly like. Russell Westbrook the other night in Washington told me, and this is true, he said, as I've told you many times, I never worry, and I mean it. The players were unfazed by 0-4. The players weren't even fazed by losing to Sacramento. They knew it was going to take some time to get back in a rhythm, and they also knew, you know, that Sacramento game, their defense was concerning. But offensively, they played pretty well, and they were getting great shots and not making any of them, and they're not a great shooting team, but they knew some of the shots they were getting would go down. So internally, not a lot of fear, not a lot of panic. Externally, people are still panicked at 4-4.
Love to get some insights on this Thunder team. Now, obviously, the unfortunate news with Roberson, who's been just a phenomenal wing defender for them. And we all know how good the Thunder team was with him in the lineup last year. I would say maybe pretty similar to how everyone talked about the Capella, Harden, CP3 lineups and how good those were when those three were healthy. The Rockets were almost unbeatable last year, and I think the Roberson lineups for the Thunder were almost there. And so, what have they done? Obviously, apart from jettisoning Melo, now with their starting lineup not having Roberson healthy, but still having Paul George and Russell Westbrook.
Okay, first. It's contractually obligated for me to point out that it's Roberson.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's.
Thank you.
Everybody does it. Dennis Schroeder called him that the other day. So, like, it's people call him Roberson. It's very common, but his name is Roberson. Nice. Yeah, they were 16-4 in the last 20 games that he was healthy last year, I believe. It's something along those lines. And I think at one point, and this includes Carmelo, I think when they had their regular starters, all five of them, I think they won their last 15 games with all five starters before Roberson got hurt. So they were pretty good. And they obviously – the thing about Roberson is when you – not only is he such a good defender, but Paul George is an excellent defender. And I think sometimes we lose sight of it because people sort of get down on Paul when his offense goes south, which happens from time to time. He'll get a little passive and he'll miss some shots. He had an 0-for-10 night the other night in Charlotte from three. But that fourth quarter against Charlotte, if you go back and watch it, his defense was incredible. He was so good defensively in that fourth quarter. So they had two guys out there, two really high-level wing defenders, and you can mask a lot of stuff, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, they're playing Carmelo a lot, who is not a good defender, and Westbrook up to fifth now in defensive rating. And again, it's a relatively small sample size still, but nine games, you know, they look like a pretty good defensive team. Steven Adams is, you know, he kind of is an anchor there. They made a change. They were starting Patrick Patterson to get some more shooting into a lineup that really lacks it. But they've gone with Jeremy Grant instead now at power forward. He's a much better defender. So they're really long. They're really athletic. You know, they have a lot of guys who can do some different things defensively. Paul George is asked to do a little more. When Roberson's out there, he's allowed to freelance a little bit. He can't do some of that stuff without Roberson. But they have a really high-level defense. Now, they'll have nights because they have some guys who aren't engaged every night, and Westbrook being one of them, you know, they'll have nights where they look atrocious defensively and stretches where they look really bad. But they're capable of kind of locking you down in moments and in stretches and in key stretches, and that's the most important thing for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just kind of looking at some of the raw numbers, they're a borderline. I'm using cleaning the glass, but they're a borderline top five defensive team, which I think makes sense. I think based on the changes they made to their roster, This team's calling card was going to be more on the defensive end. Not to say they can't pile on points in bunches with Russell, but I think how they've played so far, especially in the few games that Russ has been back, I don't think there's many people who are you're gonna find that are very surprised. And so, looking forward to this matchup against New Orleans, just to get it out of the way from an injury perspective, we've got Elfrid Payton still out, which is, and I talked about this with Andrew on the first half of the pod. I think that's a bigger loss than many of us may have anticipated before the season. One, just because I think he's surpassed a lot of people's expectations already. And two, the Pelicans are just thin in as far as backcourt goes. They've got their guys that they're relying on heavily, like Etuan Moore and Drew. But beyond that, they've got they're trying to piece it together. And so it's tough with Payton down. But so that's hopefully the only guy that's going to be out. It sounds like AD and Darius Miller are both going to play. They're probable. AD has, even in the last couple games he's played, has not really looked like himself. So the hope is that he is getting healthier every day and he'll be close to the player who was wrecking worlds over the first four games of the season. So as far as the Thunder go, any changes to injuries for them to speak of?
No, Robertson's still out, and it'll probably be early next month before we really even have a sense of when he'll be back. That's sort of the early December is the deadline for reevaluation, which is a term that the Thunder and a lot of teams use. That's kind of nonsense. He's getting reevaluated every day, but that's when they'll tell us kind of where things stand. Everybody else should be fine. Steven Adams has been fighting some stuff. He's playing. People may notice in the Thunder game when the Pelicans, if you're watching, you may notice that when he comes off the court for the first time in the game, he'll probably leave. He often goes back. He's got some back problems. And he's got some calf problems that I don't know if those two things are related, but he'll often come off the floor and ride a stationary bike for a few minutes just to stay loose. So if he goes back in the locker room, it doesn't mean he's disappearing from the game. He has been coming back, but he did miss a game with some calf tightness and has not looked entirely like himself. He has moments. Second half of the Charlotte game, his pick and roll defense was as good as anybody's in the league can be. Kemba Walker just couldn't get anywhere in the pick and roll. So his effectiveness is kind of up and down a little. If you watch the beginning of the Washington game, Dwight Howard was just devouring him. And then that sort of turned those tables as the game progressed. But I don't think he's 100%. And Westbrook really isn't quite himself yet. And I think the place you see it is like that kind of, you know, the cotton shot for him, the pull-up jumper is not quite there. He doesn't have the rhythm. He's such a rhythm player. And I think he's lacking that, but he's out there. He's playing minutes. He's finishing at the rim like Westbrook.
Got it. So, what any sort of thoughts around how this team will match up? I mean, I wish I could tell you who the Pelicans are going to start tomorrow, but I don't know. They've used, I think, maybe as many different starting lineups as games played over the past four or five games. I mean, most recently against the Spurs, they decided they were getting nothing from Solomon Hill and said, although Solomon Hill has not started a game this year, but they just threw Wesley Johnson into the starting lineup and said, all right, let's see how this goes. And so it was Drew, Etuan, Wesley Johnson, Nico, and AD. And so, you know, four of the five, you know, it's going to be Drew and Etuan and AD and Nico. I can't tell you who the fifth is going to be. It could be Tim Frazier. It could be Wesley Johnson, Solomon Hill, Darius Miller. I really don't know. And Ian Clark is another option. So, you know, that being said, I think the Thunder are a team that the Pelicans could consider going three guards against, knowing the fact that they're not going to have someone to match up with Paul George, unless they throw, they could go with a white guy like Wesley Johnson or Solomon Hill to try to lock down Paul George. And actually now talking through it, that what I said before probably makes close to no sense. I think it actually makes a lot of sense for the Pelicans to use a Wesley Johnson or a Solomon Hill on Paul George, just because they're going to want Drew to take on the challenge of Russell Westbrook. So should be interesting to see what the Pelicans decide to do there. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting there. I mean, obviously for the Thunder, it sort of starts and ends with AD, and they don't match up especially well with Davis. Better this year, I think, just to have Grant as another long, athlete in that starting lineup to replace Carmelo. So that gives them a couple of different looks because Adams struggles with guys like Davis. And there aren't many guys like Davis, but I'm talking about big, skilled, mobile guys. He can have some problems with Karl Towns, gives him a little bit of trouble as well. These are great offensive players, obviously, so that's not saying much. But, you know, how they match up there is always intriguing. That starting lineup thing is interesting because it gives the, you know, the Thunder have some options. If you've got Solomon Hill out there, you know, Paul George doesn't have to be really locked in defensively against a guy like that. So what do you do with him? Are you giving him some Jrue Holiday minutes? That stuff is always kind of intriguing. And he ends up against matched up with Davis from time to time. The Thunder does do some three-guard stuff that's been a really interesting look. It's not really three-guard, but Paul George is effectively a guard. Mm-hmm. But Paul George, 8 three-pointers a game. He's basically playing the two on offense. And they'll do some stuff with Schroeder and Westbrook together that's interesting and kind of fun. It takes makes them an even less potent shooting team, and they're not a great shooting team, but it's exciting, and they really get out and run with
it. Join the club.
Fun stuff. Yeah. There's some fun stuff when they do it. I think the guy, you know, when you talk about sort of weird X factors in the game, Alex Abrines loves shooting against the Pelicans. He's had some really good games, and he is playing very well. He's off to a very nice start this season. And when he plays, he doesn't start. I think eventually he might, but when he does, you know, if you're New Orleans, you just have to make him work defensively because he's really made some strides there. But you know, you got to make him, you got to attack him, and that's what teams will try to do.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is something that Andrew and I talked about on the last segment is. We, a lot of Pelicans fans are even media members. It was brought up at Media Day, talked a lot about the potential of the three bigs playing together, meaning Nico, AD, and Julius Randle. And up until last night against the Spurs, they had played exactly 0 minutes together. And they threw it out there for 9 minutes towards the end of the game last night, and it was pretty successful. I think the net rating was like plus 30. And so I'm curious to see if Gentry goes back to that at any point during the game tomorrow night and how that works and how he figures it out in the sense of who guards Paul George and that kind of lineup, if that's something that he decides to go back to. And again, I like seeing stuff like that because it's you're putting their most talented players on the floor. So it should be pretty interesting. I'm not sure how that lineup matches up with the Thunder, but I think I like it.
It's interesting for the Thunder. They have one of the real benefits for them defensively this year is just Grant is pretty good and pretty versatile, and they can do whatever they want with Grant. They can basically play him as long as they want. They can put him in, you know, they're starting him now, but he can play with the second unit. They can put him out there with Nerlens Noel. And basically the difference between last year and this year is they don't have to worry about Carmelo's minutes. So, You're not basing any decisions on, okay, we need to play Carmelo X amount of time because we need his offense and we need to keep him happy or whatever. And like when I say stuff like that, like Carmelo was pretty much from beginning to end until the very bitter end here. You know, he's a good locker room guy. He never was a locker room problem. He was great to deal with. But he's a guy who has a lot of cachet. He carries a lot of weight. So you do have to concern yourself with keeping Carmelo engaged. And that means playing him, and that means getting him shots and that kind of stuff. That has been a load off, I think, for them, just in the sense that now they can play Grant. There are times when they can play Patrick Patterson. You know, they've talked about the idea of Noel and Adams together. We haven't seen that yet, but we might at some point. They have a lot of flexibility that, you know, having Melo didn't afford them. So if the Pelicans went really big, it'd be interesting to see if the Thunder stay small to try to counter that, or if they would try to do a little bit of more of a bigger lineup, which we haven't seen a lot of.
As far as now having seen this team at as close to full strength as you're going to get before Roberson comes back, what do you have a lineup in particular that you've liked watching most for the Thunder, or you think is going to be most successful on most nights? Is it just a starting lineup? Is it, I think it sounds like Abrines is a guy you've liked to see in the rotation. Is he a guy in that lineup for you?
Yeah, I like that lineup. I like essentially their starters now. So Westbrook, George, Adams, and Grant. I like that lineup with Abrines. I honestly thought they might go to that when they changed the starting power forward because they took Patterson out of the lineup. They went with Grant. I thought what they might want to do there is, you know, add an additional shooter since they took a shooter off the floor in Patterson. You know, Terrence Ferguson is a guy who can make some shots. He has not been making shots, but he did against Washington. Very different player when he does. He's a really good athlete, solid defender. I like him as a rotation guy. He's a much better defender than Abrines is, but I like Abrines a lot as a scorer. I like him as a three-point shooter, and I like maximizing the amount of time you have him out on the floor with your best playmakers and the guys who have kind of the most, like, to use an overused basketball term, but the most gravity in terms of, like, you know, just creating shots for other guys. The Thunder have been really good this year in terms of moving the ball. You know, their passes are down, but everybody's passes are down a little bit. They're not, like, passing the ball dramatically more. But what you're seeing is, like, Westbrook's passes are significantly down, and their number two passer has passed more than last year. Their number three, their number four, they're moving the ball more. It's not just like Westbrook creates for somebody else. And they'll have times when they'll fall into those patterns, of course, because Westbrook and George are great isolation players. You don't want to take that part of their game away. But they're good at moving the ball and generating good looks, and I think Abrines is the guy who benefits the most from that if you put him out there with those guys. So I like that. I like him. With the starters, there are a lot of people around here who would like to see more of Hamadou Diallo with the starters. He's super fun. I just don't think he's a great fit because he's not a shooter. He looks like a draft steal and like a guy who's going to be a nice player. But I like the starting lineup with Abrines. And I'd love to see them go really weird at some point and go super small, including maybe throwing some Paul George power forward minutes and maybe going three guards. They won't do a ton of that, but I think that's in the deck of cards if they want to throw it out there at some point.
Nice. I think in regards to Diallo, I think I remember I fired off a tweet maybe at you just asking if we could trade Diallo. I was totally joking, and I think at least a couple people thought I was being serious, and it's like, yeah, what we've seen from Czech Diallo the perspectives from General Pelicans Nation have waned on him recently. He's given some good energy minutes at times this year, but it just doesn't seem like he's developing the way that we had originally hoped. But I don't think there was any way that I could possibly expect a Diallo swap.
He was, you know, it's funny. I covered that summer league, Czech's summer league, for the first one when he got drafted for the Advocate. I was still covering the Pelicans then, and like, Czech Diallo's summer league was a good reminder when Hamadou Diallo had a really good one. It was like, okay, you know, like, it's summer league. Let's all calm down here. But Hami's been a really nice find for them. He's been a guy who, you know, he doesn't play a ton, but he's a great guy when your energy's a little low. He's super aggressive. He's really energetic. He's a great offensive rebounder for a guard. And sometimes that's not the best thing in the world. There are matchups where until he learns the sort of finer points of offensive rebounding, there are some teams you just don't really want him in the game against, because he'll try to go get every offensive rebound, and that's at the expense at basically playing the 2-3. That's at the expense sometimes of getting back in transition, and that's not always what you want. But, like, he's a – you know, I talked to Paul George the first week, and Paul George has been in the NBA for a long time, and he spends a lot of – you know, he spends all his time with NBA players. What he was saying is, like, even as you spend time constantly around these guys, his athleticism pops. It's – you're like, wow, because you see guys who are great jumping off 1 foot or jumping off both feet, not too many who are great at both. And he's like a next level athlete. He's a weird guy. He's going to be a guy who, like, even if he just gets a little bit better over time, and he's destined to be like the latest in a long line of guys, Thunder guys who are great athletes and can't shoot and they hope can shoot and never develop it. But like, people will wonder how a guy who had a combine ever in his life, and he did it the year before he got drafted, but like, he had a 44.5-inch vertical, and how a guy like that gets drafted 45th is kind of beyond me.
One other Thunder-related question. How has Schroeder fit in to the team so far? I know, obviously, asking him to take the reins when Russ was out for a couple games, granted, he's used to being the starting point guard or playing starter minutes, but is – you know, tough to do that with a brand new team. But how's he kind of, now that Russ is back, how's he been fitting in overall?
I think it's been pretty good. I mean, I thought his best game for a while was the first game, the Golden State game. He looked pretty good. And that was when he was just kind of, you know, he was a starter. He was running the show. Russ wasn't there. I think it's taken him a little time now to kind of find where he fits in with the second unit. But their second unit, which has been, I mean, it's well documented. The Thunder's had one of the worst benches in the league the last couple of years. It drop off the table when Westbrook's out of the game. He's offsetting some of that. He's got a really nice pick and roll chemistry with Noel, who basically, like, Noel's offense is basically like putbacks and pick and roll lobs. But he fits really well with Schroeder. They've got a nice kind of group, Diallo's out there too, where they have just they're tremendously athletic, and so they're kind of fun to watch together. But like, they're finding ways. He's going to close a lot of games. I think most games he'll be on the floor at the end instead of a shooting guard. And what happens when they get Robertson back, we'll see. But you know, the thing about him and Westbrook is Westbrook has been, I think, part of the adjustment that's made it look better the last few games. Westbrook has really been willing, especially when Schroeder's on the floor and even sometimes when he's off, just to come off the ball, just to give the ball to somebody else and play off the ball. And with Schroeder, what that does, one, in transition, he'll give it up early and just sprint. And we've seen a couple times, Schroeder's one of the few guys in the league who can just kind of keep up with Russ and maximize him as a guy off the ball, sprinting the floor. But also, like, he's got a pretty good feel as a cutter, and Adams and Grant are pretty good at finding cutters. So it opens up some stuff when they put Westbrook off the ball, and I think it takes a guy like Schroeder to get him willing to do that. Like, he wasn't going to do that for Ray Felton very often, and certainly not for Samaje Christian 2 years ago. But a guy of that caliber, I think it's made Russ be more willing to do that, and I think it's good for the Thunder to get him maybe 4, 5, 6 extra possessions a game where he's off the ball.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I've kind of been back and forth on how I view Schroeder throughout his career, but I thought that him being a six-man type role for the Thunder, I thought it made a lot of sense, and particularly when you're thinking about giving – pretty much giving Carmelo Anthony's minutes to him. I know a different position and all, but I thought, you know, I think I was higher on the Thunder than most people going into the season. And some people took a couple steps back once the injury issues became a little more concerning with Robertson and Westbrook. Fortunately, Westbrook only had to miss a couple games, but yeah, I mean, I like the squad, and hopefully, for the Thunder's sake and for his own sake, Robertson can come back and be get back to full strength as quickly as possible. Do you have any? I would assume they're going to put him on whenever he comes back, some sort of minutes restrictions and ease him in slowly.
Yeah, they haven't. You know, in the 2 years that I've been here, they haven't done a ton of minutes restriction, or at least not in a way that they talk about. Typically, you know, Billy Donovan gives us kind of the same spiel about how they handle that, and it's, you know, it's coordinating with the medical staff and with the player. And then it's just, you know, you kind of play it by ear, and they don't talk about going into a game with a plan. Now, sometimes I think they probably do, and they just don't tell us. And I think my year in New Orleans is a great example of why you don't do that, because they would say, oh, Drew is limited to 25. And then like late in the game, he would have already played 25 and it would be a competitive game, and they would just play him 29. Yeah. So like they kind of have avoided giving minutes restrictions. But he won't be back until he's ready to play, you know, some significant number of minutes. They won't bring him back and kind of ease him in too much, because that's just kind of their way. They're big believers in, like, a guy comes back when he's ready. So I they won't rush him. You know, now their rotations may change his minutes, like the fact that they're going to get Schroeder out there. They're going to close some games with Schroeder. You know, Robertson may not be ending games. We're going to see. He's going to have to start when he comes back, because, like, the thing about a guy like him, he's so limited offensively and he's so good defensively that, like, what are you going to bring him off the bench and tell him to guard, like, second unit score? It's just stupid. You know, you totally undercut his value. So you have to start him, and he'll finish a lot of games, but, you know, he's so limited offensively and he's a really bad free throw shooter. So they're going to have some games where they don't finish with him. So his minutes over the course of time when he comes back might be a little lower anyway, but I think they'll try to get him to a point where he's ready, you know, for 20 before they throw him back out there.
Yep, makes sense. All right, so we're coming up on maybe about a half an hour. So let's just get into close it out with predictions for the game tomorrow night. So who do you like and why?
It's funny because, like, the way the Thunder played last year, this is exactly the kind of game they would lose. They had a real inability to build momentum last year. So they'd get a, you know, 3 or 4 game winning streak going, and then they kind of shoot themselves in the foot. And so my inclination is to say that New Orleans is going to win. But look, they've looked really good the last couple of games, and they're coming back home, and they've had a couple of days to rest. And so I kind of anticipate that they'll win. They look like the third quarter against the Clippers, they went on like a 20-0 run a couple of weeks ago, or last week in a home game. That looked like kind of a corner-turning moment for them, and they've been pretty good since then. So I think they're a hot team. I think they're riding pretty high right now. I do think New Orleans gives them a ton of trouble, because Holiday is such a good defender. And it's a guy that you can throw on Russ. And then AD is just like for any team on the planet, he's such a hard matchup. So I do expect it'll be a difficult game. But the way they're playing right now, I think they'll win.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Andrew made this point, and it was a good one, that I think after the game against the Spurs, it was the first time we got really heated Alvin Gentry of the season. I think he's just a little frustrated with, I mean, as you should be, the team's lost five in a row. But it's tough to see them breaking the losing skid against the team that's just starting to figure it out and play the way that a lot of people expect them to play in Oklahoma City. I think this team is also tired of losing. I think they like the way the first few games felt, and I think you're going to see a better effort. I think, like I said, Anthony Davis, you would hope that he's going to be healthier than he was against San Antonio last night. And I mean, they're getting good performances from their other guys for the most part. I mean, Julius Randle's been strong. Drew Holiday's finally, he had another slow offensive start to his season. He's been phenomenal on defense all year long, but finally put a nice game together against San Antonio last night with 29 points on 21 shots. And then, you know, a lot of times it's going to come down to which Nico you get. If Nico makes it rain from three-point land, the Pelicans are certainly in a great position to win. If he's missing, they're going to have some problems, but especially until Alfred Payton gets back. I think that's one of the things I've noticed with Nico specifically, is that he's had to take some tougher shots than he was getting with the fully healthy roster, and when they're moving the ball like they want to move the ball and push the pace. So we'll see if he can make some tough looks and keep this game tight until the end, because I think they're, you know, they can play with anyone, they can beat anyone in a close game at the end with the top end talent they have. So we'll see, but it should be a fun game.
Yeah, I do think, you know, I'm a believer in NBA desperation and the desperate team. You know, I kind of thought Washington would beat the Thunder the other night because of that, and two different people who cover the Wizards told me you're overestimating how desperate the Wizards really are. Like, you have to, in order to feel desperation, you have to be a desperate team, and they just don't have that in them. And I watching some of the Knicks game tonight, I sort of understood that they won pretty easily, but like, they didn't look like a team that was like just dying to win. There's a great moment in the third quarter of that game the other night where the Thunder were up 29 at the half, and the first play of the second half, the Wizards miss a shot. I think they missed. Might have been a turnover, but I think it was a miss. Westbrook pushes the ball up the court, and they just don't find Terrence Ferguson in transition. He's wide open. So it's like, really, that's what you did right out of halftime, you know? So like, teams aren't always desperate, but I think for a good team like the Pelicans to have lost five straight, it's a lot. It's a lot of losses in a row. If this were in New Orleans, I would be comfortably picking them to win, and I would expect that the Thunder will kind of get their best shot. So I think we'll get something good.
Yep, agree. Well, Brett, thanks for joining again. I'm sure most of the people listening know are familiar with you and the great work that you do. But for those that aren't, let everyone know where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, so it's at theathletic.com, which you can subscribe to, and I'm sure we have a discount going right now. And you can follow me at @BDawsonWrites, WRITES, on Twitter. I've written a lot of stuff. Good story this week about Nerlens Noel, so if people have any interest. If you got, like, Kentucky fans along the way here who follow the Pelicans for obvious reasons, that's a good
note. Pelicans drafted him.
Yeah, exactly. good, and they'll probably end up with Hamidou Diallo at some point because they need to get those guys. So, but that Nerlens Noel story is something that if people wanted to check out a piece of my work, that would be something I would recommend.
Awesome. Okay. Well, again, Brett, thanks again. Really, really appreciate the time. And let me know if you're coming to Chicago for the Bulls game, and we'll meet up.
Yeah, I will definitely let you know, and I will literally do your podcast anytime you ask me. So thank you for having me. It's always good to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much.